This is HPR episode 2348 entitled, Vimkints 005, and is part of the series, Vimkints. It is hosted by Dave Morris, and is about 38 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, Hints and Tips for Vim Users, Part 5.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello everybody, welcome to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Dave Morris. Today I'm going to do show number 5 in the Vim Hints series. So I've started by saying, oops, where did half of 2015, all of 2016 and the first half of 2017 go? Well, it's been that long since we had the last episode of this series, number 4. What happened? Well, life got in the way, and also motivation dwindled a bit. This particular series, talking about Vim, although I think it's really important, is quite demanding. The said series that I did, which had 5 episodes in it and required a lot of research, useful it turned out, but a lot of research, well, that was a walk in the park compared to this one, which is, I've written down here, a continental scale landscape. Vim is very, 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 very complicated and feature-rich. And that's not a bad thing. The way to approach it is to learn enough to survive with, then learn a bit more that makes life a bit easier, and keep on learning from then on. That's the way I see it. So, as I've said, the original goal of the series was to try and introduce some of the useful features of Vim and make it manageable for everyday use. And the hope was, and still is, that the series could get people started on their own journeys through the marvels of Vim. The other motivation for doing this was that there's a currently circulating meme, I guess it's what it is, which is summarized in the Stack Overflow article, which I've referenced here, How to Exit the Vim Editor, which is trying to make out that of people using Vim, most people get lost in it and can't get out of it. Could have something to do with the fact that Vim sometimes is the default editor that you're taken to by various things like Git. I think that's true, is it? Yeah, never actually checked that. But, well, we dealt with how to get out of Vim in the first episode quite deliberately. And I think that it's not a difficult thing to do. And I think that reveals that this meme is somewhat ridiculous. But you know how these things go. Once they get started on the internet, they just keep on and on and on until everybody's thoroughly sick of them. So we've done 4 episodes of this series, and the last one was in March 2015. I've listed links to all of the previous episodes, but I thought it'd be useful if we just whizzed through rapidly to summarize what was covered. Episode 1, we looked at the very, very basic editing, and talked about the modes of Vim, which is one of the features of Vim. Normal, insert, and command modes we looked at. In episode 2, we looked at Vim's backup mechanism, where it keeps recovery information. We looked at how to undo and redo changes, because it's useful to be able to undo what a mistake you've made up to a number of levels. And we also looked, in the context of the backup, at how you recover in the event of a problem. I went to quite some length about this because it's one of the features that can trip you up, so it was useful to, I thought it would be useful to understand it better. We also started looking at the .vimrc config file, which is a vital component of Vim and its usability. In episode 3, we began looking at movement, which you can do in normal mode. That's where you're not actually typing into Vim, but you're issuing commands to move around and change stuff and whatever. We added more to the configuration file. This is the sort of model I want to continue following, various commands followed by some extras to add to the configuration file you might find useful. Hopefully the number of changes to the config file will diminish as time goes on, but it's at the moment it's actually increasing more than anything else. I hope you find that useful anyway. Then in episode 4 we looked at more movement commands and we looked at searching. We began looking at things that make changes, so we could add stuff, insert stuff, delete stuff, and change text in various ways. And in the concept of doing these, we looked at movements and how you could do one of these actions in relation to a movement, delete up to the end of this word and that type of thing. And again, we added more things to the configuration file. So this time I want to look at the subject of copying and pasting, which you can do in Vim. And when we've seen a little bit of this, in as much as when we've changed stuff and when we've deleted stuff, it's been in normal mode, and we want to be able to do the missing bit, which is to copy things and then paste things, or indeed delete things and paste things, as we'll see in a minute. I made a reference to how you can find out the full gory details of this in the help system, and there's also an online copy of the same documentation which I've linked to. So first of all, how do you copy stuff in Vim? Well, there is a command based around the letter Y, where Y stands for yank, which is another word for copying. So if you type two lowercase y's in succession, so YY in normal mode, it copies lines. You'll remember that we looked at DD, both lowercase, in episode 4, and if you proceed that by a count, it will repeat the number of lines. So it's the same with the YY command. It will yank more than one line, which is the default if you don't give a count. So if you want to say you're on a line, you want to copy that line and the next two, you do 3YY, both lowercase. There is a capital Y command, which is a synonym, which I can't say, for the two lowercase Ys. But it doesn't do the equivalent of what the capital C and capital D commands do, which is yank from the current position to the end of the line. It copies the entire line. So that's a little bit of an inconsistency, but it's one of those things you have to live with, unfortunately. So if you want to yank less than a line, then you would use a single lowercase y, and that operates on single character mode, but you need to follow it with a movement command, just like with the lowercase c for change, lowercase d that we saw in episode 4. So I've given some examples of these operator plus movement combinations. So for example, lowercase y lowercase w will yank from the cursor to before the start of the next word. Remember that lowercase w jumps to the start of the next word. And lowercase y lowercase e yanks from the cursor to the end of the next word. So if you're on a word already, it will yank to the end of it, to the last letter of it. If you are at the end of a previous word or at a space between words or something like that, then it will go from there to the end of the next word. Lowercase y dollar yanks from the cursor to the end of the line, which is similar to the yy command, except that yy just, if you're in the middle of a line with yy, then it copies everything on the line. Whereas lowercase y dollar copies from where you are to the end of the line. Lowercase y zero yanks from before the cursor to the beginning of the line. So you remember the zero command takes you to the beginning of the line. That is column one. I say that because there's a circumflex which takes you to the first non-blank of a line. So you can actually do y followed by a circumflex. I have put that in the list. But the point of doing this is to say that there are many combinations, and I'm not going to list them all out, but you can deduce some of them from what we've already learned about movement commands. And also you can look at the documentation to get more of a flavour. The last one in my list of examples was lowercase y followed by a closed parenthesis. Remember, closed parenthesis moves to the end of the sentence, so it will yank from that your cursor position to the end of the sentence. So okay, that's it. You've copied all these things in all the different ways, and what can you do with them? Well, you can paste them, otherwise there's not much point. So, but this also applies to having deleted or changed text, because when you delete text, you can then paste it somewhere. So that would allow you to not only to copy it, but to move text around. Pasting it, the Vim documentation calls this action put, but I prefer to think of it as pasting. But you use the letter lowercase p and uppercase p letters. So the lowercase p command in normal mode pastes text after the cursor, and the uppercase p command puts or pastes text before the cursor. In both cases, the cursor is left on the last character of the pasted text. Both commands can be preceded by a count, and in that case you get multiple instances of the text. Now, a number of Vim commands can be preceded by a lowercase g, which subtly alters their effects. And we'll start using this lowercase g qualifier, if that's the right term, in this particular case. So if you use lowercase g lowercase p, it behaves just like the lowercase p, but it leaves the cursor after the pasted text. So that's useful. For example, if you've copied a word and you want to paste it twice, if you use just the lowercase p, then you'll get the two instances colliding with one another, because you'll be left on the text itself. But if you use lowercase g lowercase p, then it'll look more sensible. You'll get a gap between the two instances. So similarly with lowercase g uppercase p, it behaves just like the uppercase P command, but it leaves the cursor after the pasted text. Now, I thought it was useful maybe at least to reference the fact that what's happening here is when you delete stuff, or you change stuff, or you copy stuff, it's stored in a register. I didn't say as explicitly as I meant to that when you're doing a change command, the C, various variants of the C command, then what happens is you effectively delete the text that your movement specifies, and then you go into insert mode and you can type stuff. So the things that was deleted is stored away for pasting. The register that's used is a default one if you don't specify it, but and a number of other registers exist in Vim and can be chosen as the source or the destination of commands. Now, this is quite a large and complex topic, and I'm not going to cover it now because I think this episode's going to be complicated enough, but I'll make reference to it for future shows. I'm not completely clear when I'm going to do it. Maybe in the next episode it might fit better there. So the register capability is amazingly powerful, but just to say it exists. So I've got some examples of cutting and pasting and copying and all that stuff. Just three, just to give you some idea. I hope that you will find that as you use the knowledge you've now gained, as you use the Vim editor, you will come to appreciate what you can do with these various commands, and we'll try and add more examples of all the various things as we go along. Might be worth actually reserving some time just to do some interesting examples at some stage. So here's the first one. It's a simple use of cut and paste, and it's the sequence XP. These are two commands, lowercase x, lowercase p. What this does, it swaps the character under the cursor with the one after it. So if you do what I do and type words and stuff with letters the wrong way around, so I type T-E-H rather than T-H-E. If you were to position your cursor on the E of T-E-H and then type X-P, it would turn into T-H-E. And the reason that works is the X deletes the E, the letter E, turning the result into T-H, and then it's stored in a register, and you can paste it with P, lowercase p, which places it to place it after the cursor, which is currently on the H, and you get the E after the H. So XP is a great one. Just get that into muscle memory and you'll find yourself using this a lot as you type things in Vim, edit things even. The next one is lowercase d, lowercase w, uppercase p. You can use that to swap words. It's not the best way, but it does actually do it, just to demonstrate. So d, lowercase w deletes the current word, assuming the cursor is on the first character. So you're on the first character of the word, you type lowercase d, lowercase w, delete to the beginning of the next word. So it will eat up all of that word and the space that follows it. Then in that sequence, DWWP, the next W moves forward one word, and then capital P pastes the deleted word in front of it. So the effect would be to swap two words. I haven't done an example here, but hopefully you'll be able to go into some text and then try it out with DWWP, and then type U to undo what you just did. Yes, you really did want to swap two words. It's not the most robust and reliable way of doing this, as I say, but hopefully it makes the point that there are these capabilities. The last example, the sequence lowercase y, lowercase w, capital P. This yanks the current word. Again, it's assuming that the cursor is on the first character, and then pastes it in front of the cursor, and thereby duplicates the word. So the YW means yank up to the end of the word, in other words, to just before the next word, and that gets you to that particular position. And then if you use a uppercase P, it places the word you just yanked before the cursor. Okay, try them out and see how you go. Now, in episode 4, we saw that Vim has this concept of text objects. So we looked at sentences and paragraphs and how you move around with them. We've already mentioned one with a lowercase y close parenthesis. There are more than the ones we've seen so far, and we'll look at some more in relation to commands. And again, this is quite a detailed subject, and I'm not going to dig all the way through this today. And you can look in the help under motion.txt, and there's a link to the online documentation if you want to look ahead and find out other things you can do. I will be covering them though in due course. So there's the concept of an inner object. We've seen commands like lowercase d, lowercase w, and lowercase y, lowercase w, which do things relating to a word, you know, yank from the cursor position to before the beginning of the next word, for example. But there's another one, which is lowercase y, lowercase I, lowercase w. And what that means is yank inner word. The I means inner. At least it's a way to remember it. And what it does is it copies from the start of the current word to the end of that word. It doesn't matter where in the word the cursor is positioned. So Vim is actually identifying that you're in a word, assuming you are, and it will yank the entirety of that word from the start to the end. So similarly, DIW, all lowercase, deletes that entire word. The inner word thing means that it doesn't include any non-word character after the word, nor does it include any leading non-word characters. So that business about movement, where you just use the W command, it takes you across the inter-word gap. But in this case, DIW does not include that interword gap. It's just the word itself. There are other objects that can be used with this inner business. So DI and some other movement command will work. And you can do that with sentences and paragraphs. But I'm not going to look at them all just now because I don't want to overload you. But we'll come back to them next. The next episode, I think, might be a smart move. Certainly be looking at them and re-looking at them probably as we go along. The other object uses the letter A, which the documentation says is A for an object. I'm not sure I enjoy that because it doesn't make a lot of linguistic sense to me. The I stands for inner object. But anyway, I like to think the A is signifying all. It's a way of remembering it. But the point of it is that it does a slightly different thing. So YAW, where they're all lowercase, it copies the word including trailing white space, if there is any. And if the last word is the word you're on is followed by punctuation, like a full stop or something, then it will include the leading white space as well. Instead, I should say. So again, it works regardless of where the cursor is positioned in the word. It'll take that entire text object. And you can do this with other text objects as well, as I've said before, like sentences and paragraphs. But we're going to leave looking at these till later. So I've tried to make some examples here. It's hard to do in an audio format, or indeed in a textual format. And the long notes here are attempting to help explain this. What I did was I typed out two rows of numbers which are meant to signify the column numbers within a file, and then I followed that with a line. The line of text is Hacker Public Radio is dedicated to sharing knowledge, full stop. And then I'm going to use that as some examples for some examples. So the first example is, if the cursor is at column 10, which is the B of public, if you then type DIW there, all lowercase, it results in the deletion of the word public and leaves all the spaces. So you end up with a result which says hacker, followed by two spaces, radio is dedicated to sharing knowledge. So if we operate on the same original text with the cursor at column 10 as before, instead typing DAW, all lowercase, then it will delete the word public, but it will include the trailing space. So the result is hacker space radio is dedicated to sharing knowledge. Example 3, we're assuming that the cursor's in column 48, which is the W of knowledge. If we typed DIW, all lowercase, then this results in the deletion of the word knowledge, but leaves the leading space and the terminating full stop. So I've got an example of what the result of that would be. If, however, we had the cursor in the same position, column 48, and we typed DAW, all lowercase, then it results in the deletion of the word knowledge and the leading space, so that it effectively terminates the sentence. So if you had a sentence that you didn't like very much and it's got extra words on the end, you can position to whichever of the first words is of the superfluous words, and then type count DAW, and it will delete them all. And but it won't delete the full stop at the end of the sentence, but it will remove any spaces. So it will turn the sentence into the form that you would want, and it will do it nice and easily. So I listed a few other objects that you might want to work with, but I've not gone into a lot more detail about them. We've got YIS, all lowercase, which means yank in a sentence. So that will yank all of the sentence from the start of the sentence to up to and including the ending punctuation. So that particular sentence we were just dealing with would have just copied the whole thing, even if it was embedded in a paragraph. YAS, all lowercase, yanks a sentence including trailing white spaces. So if that sentence is inside a paragraph somewhere, then it will copy out the trailing spaces as well. So you could paste it into another paragraph, so long as you positioned it appropriately on the first character of the sentence you wanted to proceed with it. YIP, all lowercase, yank in a paragraph, and that will go from the start of the paragraph to before the terminating blank line. Remember that paragraphs are separated by blank lines. And YAP, all lowercase, would yank a paragraph including the trailing blank line. So it will copy the whole paragraph including the line after it. Okay, that's enough of that, I think. Just one more little, one more smaller, shorter, more simple subject before I go on to look at the configuration file. That's looking at joining lines. Now, there are times when you've got two lines adjacent to one another, i.e. one after the other, and you want to join them together. And you can do that by in normal mode, simply typing the uppercase J command. Remember that lowercase J is a cursor movement command. So it's uppercase J for join. The uppercase J command can be preceded by a count, and then it will join multiple lines. Here's a simple example in a moment. The uppercase J command places a space between the joined lines. What it's actually doing is removing the end of line characters between lines and replacing them with spaces. There are a few side effects here. There are options you can have switched on which will add double spaces after the end of sentences. Of course, that's a sort of typing convention that some people use. And if that sort of feature is enabled, then the uppercase J command will use that option. Will honor it, was what I was groping to say. Now, there's a lowercase g can precede the uppercase J, which, remember, is a way of enhancing the functionality of a command. And it joins lines, but it doesn't add any spaces. So I've got an example here which shows the effect of the two things. We've got an imaginary file which contains the words hacker, public, and radio, each on a separate line. If we position the cursor on the first line and typed 3 uppercase J, then it will happily turn it into hacker space, public space, radio. If you did the same with that file but used 3 lowercase g uppercase J, you would get hacker public radio, all as one word, no spaces. So traditionally, you can have a tradition after 4 episodes, we've been structuring these things by introducing various commands, then going to look at configuration file additions. Well, I'm going to do the same here. In episode 4, the file had got fairly long, and I'm not going to reiterate the whole file that we've got so far, I'm just going to be adding to it. But as an inclusion with this episode, there's a file called example_vimrc_5, where the 5 reflects that it relates to episode 5. And you can download that and check it out. It's got everything we've done before and also what we're going to add today. So the first thing we're going to add to the config file is the thing that enables syntax highlighting. Now, Vim's syntax highlighting is a built-in capability, though it can be enhanced. We'll look at that much later on, how you can enhance these things. It already caters for a whole range of languages and formats and so forth, but it's good to switch it on. And the option you want is simply syntax space on. You need to put that in your configuration file and you will get syntax highlighting. If you're doing this on a terminal that has got color capabilities, and you'd be hard pressed to use one that doesn't, I would imagine, then you will get different coloring depending on what it is you're editing. Now, if you are typing stuff, maybe you're typing lists of things, or you're in a programming language or whatever, indentation could well be relevant to what you're doing. So if you've indented a line while you're typing and then you start a new line, you can make Vim automatically move the add an indentation, shall we say, to that new line to copy the one above. So that's really useful. It's a really useful feature, and you can switch it on with the option set space auto indent. With these set commands, they usually have an abbreviation. Set can be abbreviated to SE and auto indent to AI. So you can type SE space AI. Remember, if you remember back to previous episodes, I'm telling you this, but suggest that you use the full form in your configuration files, because it makes it a lot easier to remember what it means. You can switch it off with set space no auto indent, or the short form would be SE space no AI, NOAI. You'd do that from the command line if you needed to, for example. This brings us on to wrapping. Wrapping of lines, that is. If you're typing away into insert mode, by default, in a brand new Vim, you will just keep typing until you hit a new line. Press the Enter key or whatever. But you can make Vim do an automatic wrap to the next line by adding a line break. And it will do this at a particular point which you have defined. And it will do it when the defined line width has reached and the current word is completed. So it doesn't split words, which would be very, very, very irritating. The thing about this automatic wrapping, though, is that if you have a line which is already as long as whatever width you've set, and you go and edit it and add a whole bunch of words and stuff and text in the middle of it, making it exceed that width, Vim will not then wrap it because it only does it as you're typing. We will look at how to re-implement the wrapping at a later stage. We're not going to cover that today, but it will only do that when you're typing stuff, basically at the end of the line. So you define the maximum width of text, that width which triggers the wrapping, with the command set space text width equals and then a number. So for example, one I prefer personally is set space text width equals 78. You can abbreviate it. Text width is abbreviated to TW. And you can switch it off with setting text width to 0. And it's off by default. Now when you're typing stuff in insert mode and you press the tab key, then Vim will add a tab character. And that causes it to move according to the appropriate tab stop. Just like, it comes from the old typewriter days where you had physical tabs on your typewriter and the carriage moved to those when you hit the tab key. Now, this takes us into an area of whether you actually want to have tab characters in your file or whether you'd sooner have things to spaces in there to indent stuff. And it's a bit of a contentious area for various reasons, which I won't go into today. In fact, I'd like to spend some time looking at this subject in a later episode because I'd like to give you all the factors for making your decision on which way you want to go with this and tell you the choices I've made and so forth. We'll do that later. There is a way in which you can ask Vim to replace tab characters with spaces, and you can also ask Vim to make its increments of indenting be 4 columns as opposed to the 8 columns that you would get with a tab. So the two configuration options that control these things are called expand tab and shift width. Expand tab forces all tab characters to be replaced by the appropriate number of spaces in insert mode. So you just turn it on or off. Set expand tab will switch it on, and set no expand tab, switch it off. And you can abbreviate these to ET to go on and no ET to go off. If you're editing a file that's already been typed in, which contains tab characters, this setting will not affect those characters. It's only ones which are being typed in that are affected. You can go through the file and change all the tab characters to the appropriate numbers of spaces with a command colon retab, but we'll cover that in more detail when we look at this subject in more depth. So controlling the number of spaces to use for auto indenting is achieved with the shift width option. You follow it with a number, so you might type set space shift width equals 4. The auto-indent step is 4 spaces. That can be abbreviated to SW equals 4, as I've shown. There's quite a lot to be said about this whole subject, but we're going to leave it for now. And when we do look at it in more detail, we'll be looking at the tab stop and soft tab stop commands and how you can use those. There is something that you need to have some indication of. That's why I've referred to it here. When you're in insert mode and you're typing stuff in, you will find that Vim will copy, you've got auto indent on, and Vim will copy the indentation of your previous line, and you might want to undo that. Well, you can just type the backspace key to go backwards, but you could also use Control D to achieve the same thing, which skips back whatever the shift width number is of columns. If you wanted to add further shift width numbers of characters, then Control T will add further indent. So I'll come on to these in more detail in a subsequent episode, and show you some of the other ways of achieving similar things. But we'll reserve that for probably the next episode, when we talk about tabs and spaces in more detail. The last element to add to the configuration file, in episode 4, we looked at searching, and we used the options ink search and HL search. Now, ink search caused the search target to be moved to as you started to type the search into the editor, and HL search highlighted all of the targets as you once you'd set the search in motion. Now, if you're in the middle of doing an edit and you search for a thing, I don't know, you search for the word then or something, and you find it and you do whatever you wanted to do with it, all of these search targets are going to remain highlighted for the rest of the session until you switch them off. And I said that it's possible to use the command mode command colon nohl, which is turn off the highlight. But it gets a little tedious to do this, because you can get a lot of highlighting with certain searches. And you'll see that it's relevant to a lot of other things we'll be doing in the future. So what I suggest you do is to add something to your configuration file which will make it easier to switch it off. And one of the commonest things to do is to set things up so that if you type Control L is a sequence which is used to refresh the screen. It's done in a lot of screen-based apps do this. Control L is sort of generic, refresh the screen. Well, what I'm suggesting here is a mechanism which will not only refresh the screen, but it will also turn off all the highlights. This is using a feature we've not looked at all yet, so it's one of these things you can just copy and paste into your config file. And we'll come on to how it works, what it does at a later stage. But essentially what's happening in brief is that the Control L sequence, the Control L character it would be, is being redefined, remapped, so that when it's issued, it does two things. It issues this nohl command, and it also does what Control L normally does. So you'll see the line here. I won't read it out, but you just type that in exactly as it is, or you can cut and paste it out of the example file that I've provided. Okay, so that's everything. Now, the remaining bits in the notes are a summary of all that we've covered today, which I'm not going to go over, but it's just there as an aid memoir if you find it useful. There's the various things we're going to add to the config file. I've included the set HL search in here as well, because I think it's nice to have the definition of Control L immediately after the set HL search, because the two things are related. But that's just me. And you'll see the same in the example file that I've given you. So that's it. And I've included these notes in EPUB form in case that's useful. We'll try and get another episode out before too long. Certainly not nearly 2 years gap between this one and the next. Okay, bye just now.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.